Welcome to the Big Presentations Podcast, where we offer encouragement and guidance to those who make big presentations in small rooms. We believe that properly focused practice and preparation result in effective communications. I'm your host, Paul Gibson. Let's get started. All right, so today we're going to have some fun. Mike and I are both big fans of the musicians and the concepts that we're going to talk about today. Are you curious? Well, stay tuned because we're going to get into that and it's going to be so joyful. But first, we need to review last week's discussion.
Last week, we talked about how there are two primary types of small room presentations, informative and persuasive. We discussed the expectations of each type, common mistakes, and some principles that will guide the development of your presentations. So if you want to ensure that you are surpassing expectations with your presentations, check out this episode. It will challenge you and equip you to deliver big presentations in small rooms.
That it will. And we're going to find out about, how to instill joy in your audience coming up in just a few minutes. Stick around.
Could your organization benefit from a big presentations training? I bet it could. I mean, I've had the honor of working with both private businesses and municipalities and nonprofit organizations. And so if you have internal meetings that include updates and proposals, you should check this out. If you do sales presentations in small rooms, man, we can help you there too. Just go to mrgpresentations.com to book your training today. That's mrgpresentations.com.
And we're back. Today, we're talking about the thing that can bring joy into your presentations. And we're going to hear some great examples on this principle as well.
This is going to be so good. I'm smiling already.
It's true. I'm looking at him. I can see him through the camera right now. He is indeed smiling. So let's get into this.
Here's the big idea. One source of joy when making a presentation is... You ready for this?
Mm-hmm. Sitting right here. Bring it on.
One source of joy when making a presentation is practice.
I think you and I may have different definitions in life, but that's okay. I find this a little weird, but I'm sure you're going to expound. So tell me, practice is a source of joy?
Yeah. Presentation practice and the idea of joy are seldom connected, True. But they should be. Okay. But I'm getting ahead of myself, so let's back up a little bit.
Okay. I feel like you're going to need some sort of a running head start at this one.
Okay. Here we go. You know your audience. You know your message. You are determined to make the connection between the two. So you develop great content and then you practice so you can deliver it well and connect the audience to your message. So let's focus on that element of practicing for a great delivery and see how it can lead to joy.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. I'm digging it. So now we prefaced this content by saying we were going to be talking about musicians and music. So that's the part I was really looking forward to. So can we get into that part?
Yeah, sure. So for me, there are two artists that inspired this idea. A few years ago, for my birthday, I received tickets to see Switchfoot at the House of Blues in Dallas, Texas. As usual, there were a couple of opening acts and they were really good. But by the time Switchfoot was taking the stage, I was already tired. We were down on the floor near the stage, and there were no chairs. Now, I have knee problems, and I'm old. So I was in pain from standing on this concrete floor, and I was feeling a little disappointed because I thought I might actually have to leave early simply because I was in so much pain. But when Switchfoot took the stage, I forgot all about the pain, and I joined the joyful experience that they created. The atmosphere that they quickly established was energetic, it was inviting, it was joyful. They were having a blast and including the audience in the fun. John Foreman, the lead singer, roamed the crowd at least three times. It seemed he was determined to come within arm's reach of every audience member. It was a joyful romp of connection, and the audience was all smiles.
Now, for those who may be sitting back in their chairs going, it's like, okay, so the lead singer wandered through the audience. Big deal. Everyone can walk through a group of people. I do it all the time. Maybe I live in New York. This is just what I do. Well, let's think about this. I mean, this is how I break it down in my head. Number one, writing a song sounds hard enough to begin with. That seems like a challenge. Number two, having written hundreds and hundreds of songs, as I know Switchfoot as a band has done and has not released all of them, that sounds a next step of difficulty. You think about performing a 1 to 2 hour concert live of a bunch of these songs, remembering how to play them, as well as remembering where you're going on stage, just the stage part, that's another level of difficulty. As a songwriter, remembering all the lyrics while you're doing stuff is also next level, but then trying to think about the interactions between an artist and their audience while doing all of that, and trying to figure out like, oh, this person wants a high five. Guess I got to give him a high five. I want to give this person a high five. Nope, he's not into it. Moving on. I mean, that's a lot to navigate for me just walking down the street as I give random strangers high fives. But the idea of doing that as a singer while keeping up with where you are in the song, all the words, what you're going to do next, and how much longer you have before you really need to get back on stage for the other thing that you've already planned, that is next level hard. And I can't even wrap my head around it. So that's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, some people were chill like me. Like, he gave me a high five. I was so excited. But there's other people who were like wanting to tackle him. They were so excited. They were like, high five's not good enough. We're doing a bear hug. And, you know, so he's having to maneuver around that while keeping things on track. And he made it back on the stage at the time when he needed to be back on the stage. It was amazing to see the timing and the energy, because he was truly connecting with people, making eye contact and making that type of human connection while remembering the lyrics to the song and where he needed to be and all that. Man, that was so much fun and so impressive.
Ah, dude, that sounds fantastic. I've seen Switchfoot, but it's been a long time, and it was a lot of fun to watch them. Although, here's a weird tangent. The place where we saw Switchfoot was an old ballroom that had a floor that was a wood floor, but it had springs underneath the floor. So as you jumped, you got just a little bit of extra bounce, and that just made it all the more fun.
Oh, nice. Yes. Oh. So that's my first example, but I've got another one. We doing all right on time? We got time for another one?
Yeah, sure. Whatever. People ain't got nothing to do. Let's move on to another one.
Yeah, and we're talking about music, so, you know, we could talk all day.
That's right.
We could do this all day.
That's right.
Yeah, probably shouldn't, but could.
At least time for another story or two. So let's get into that.
Here's another one. Not long ago, I asked my wife, my daughter, my youngest daughter, and a friend of hers to watch a couple of performances by an artist that they were, at the time, unfamiliar with. I had been so impressed with the joyful and skillful performance that I wanted them to see it. And I wanted them to see it in two different settings. They were a little skeptical and more than a little amused by my excitement. But man, when those performances were over, they too were smiling. And so was I, even though this was a repeat thing for me. The joy was contagious, even that second time around. That artist's name is John Batiste, and the song is Freedom. We watched both the official video and a concert video, and we enjoyed both of them. Like the Switchfoot experience, the videos just invited you into that fun and allowed you to appreciate both the talent and the party all at the same time. I mean, it seemed like it was effortless. It seemed the performances were effortless, expressing the same joy that you might see like in a toddler spinning in circles and just laughing at the pure fun of it. It was awesome.
And by the way, I have a toddler. I've seen this recently, and it is quite infectious. So you made a comment on making a connection with a live concert as well as on screen. I think that is indeed another true talent, because in a live concert, you only have to worry about the people who are in front of you. I mean, as well as, you know, obviously doing the song and doing it right and all that, which is complicated. But when you're doing it in a video, all you got to do is pay attention to where the camera is, and you perform to the camera. But when you're in a situation where maybe you're on like a late night show or something performing as a band, and you have an audience that is in front of you as well as a national or international audience that's looking at you through their phone or their TV screen or whatever, then you got a split audience that you have to pay attention to both. And it takes effort to really do both justice, because you want to be able to include the people who are there in person, because that's a special experience for them, even if they didn't know who you were before they got there, because they're going to see this live, this big deal on TV. But then for everybody else, they're sitting on the couches, they want to be included too. So that, you know, kind of mugging for the camera and leaning in close and you know, drawing attention to things that the camera people might want to see next and all that, that takes a lot of preparation as well. And I dare say they rehearse that for the cameras at least a couple of times before they do it as well, to make sure they get that exactly right too.
Oh man. Yeah. And John Batiste, he did a great job of like in that setting where it's live on a late night show.
Welcome back here performing Freedom from his brilliant album, We Are. It's John Batiste.
Of realizing he's on camera, connecting with the audience, but also connecting with the people in his band.
Mm-hmm.
He was having so much fun with them and applauding them for the great job that they were doing. I mean, he was having fun himself and was watching them have fun as well. And it just all layered on to create this joyful experience for everybody who was involved. It was so cool.
So this has all been fun and all, but what is this, all this music talk and joy and concerts and whatnot, what does that have to do with presentations specifically?
Okay, all right. So I think I can answer that question with a question of my own.
All right, Yoda, go for it.
How much purposeful effort was required for those performances to be effective? How much work was involved? What we observe is a presentation. The artists know their audience, they know their message, and they're determined to make a connection. And that influences the lyrics, the music, the practice, and the performance.
Yeah, of course. And if they left out that part of practice, the high quality lyrics or the music would just be overshadowed with how awkward they were performing those great lyrics and music on stage. And well, let's just face it, the joy would just go to the side. I mean, you wouldn't be thinking about joy, you'd just be thinking about how sorry you felt for them because they're bombing on stage.
Yeah. Right. So here's the deep thought of the day. There is a joy that proficiency brings.
True. And I get it. I mean, the smile-inducing performances of a band like Switchfoot or an artist like a John Batiste are built on countless hours of practice. They don't have to think about what word comes next or what chord is next, what dance move they're going to do after this. The practice just made the performance an exercise in muscle memory, freeing them up to focus on the audience and inviting them into that fun.
Yeah, it's easy to miss that reality and to be lured into believing that their job is just to have fun, as if they just wake up, get on stage, have a party, and make lots of money.
Okay. Now, this is ringing a bell for me. It reminds me of another music-based example, since that's what we're doing
today.
Really?
Okay, yeah. What you got?
Okay, so we're going to go back to the 80s, the dawn of MTV.
Nice.
One of the biggest songs was called Money for Nothing. It was by a band called Dire Straits. The lyrics captured this kind of assumption that people have of no work and all play when it comes to a musical performance.
Oh, yeah. I remember those lines. That ain't working.
That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working.
That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. You get your money for nothing.
There you go. You nailed it. In this song, the working man, who's a microwave installer, thinks that the musicians, well, don't work at all. But the hundreds of hours required to produce that song and the accompanying music video, well, that make the song just a little bit funnier.
Right. Yeah. That's a great example. Once again, the point is that joyful proficiency required extensive preparation. Ooh. There's this old quote that's taken on many forms, but it's really powerful. And it's used quite often with music and musical rehearsals. Here it is. Amateurs practice until they get it right. Professionals practice until they can't get it wrong. Today, we've been talking about practice. To learn more about this, check out chapter 13 of the book, Big Presentations in Small Rooms. In that chapter, you will learn mindsets and applications that will help you prepare for a great presentation. That one chapter is worth the price of the book. So get your copy today at Amazon. You can choose digital, print, or audiobook. You'll find a link in the show notes.
And we're back. I want to rein this in just a little bit. We've been talking about a lot of lofty things, Grammy award-winning musicians and music videos on MTV, but we want to make sure that we're grounded in reality. Because that's a primary goal of this podcast. We want to be real, but we also want to be helpful.
Right. Yeah, right. And the reality is that this principle is a challenge for some of us and an impossibility for others, at least in the short term.
Right. And that's not depressing. That's just where you might be.
Right.
Big presentations are often just one more thing on your already packed schedule. There's just not enough time to practice enough to reach this level of familiarity with the presentation that you're going to give.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes you might even be called on to deliver an impromptu presentation, and it might seem that you're unable to prepare at all. But if you have experience with impromptu presentations, that practice will make it much easier. And if you don't have experience, you will be building it in that opportunity. The practice that you're able to put in will make it so much easier.
That's true. And this reminds me of a story of my own. That's right. I'm not going to get left out of this thing. So there is a probably much lesser known hip hop artist by the name of Plato. And I went to go see him play with another somewhat less known artist by the name of Pigeon John when I lived in Portland, Oregon. And I had never seen either one before, but had listened to a lot of their records throughout the years. And I didn't really know what to expect from a live performance. But Plato was doing really good. He was going through a bunch of the songs that I knew, and I'm just having fun. And then he, in the middle of a set, goes, "All right, so we're going to do something a little different. I want you to throw a topic at me." And somebody threw out, like, I don't know, brushing your hair. And he's like, "All right, cool. Hey, what's your name?" And he was pointing at me. I said, "I'm Paul." He goes, "All right, Paul, brushing his hair. That's funny. You're bald. Here we go." And he just went on to make this whole hip-hop song, just pulled it out of his head about brushing your hair and my name being Paul. And he created this thing. And then, you know, he would let the beat ride for just a second. Then he would be like, "Throw something else at me." And people would like shout out something else. And it was like going to an improv comedy show, but he was creating hip hop moments out of these random topics. And it sounded really good. I mean, he's having all of these ideas thrown his way, has no clue what's going to happen. I hadn't talked to him before. He'd never met me, but it was a lot of fun. And that kind of practice of through the years doing that and writing rhymes and performing allowed him to be able to, with competency, make up something on the spot that was entertaining and funny and really engaged the audience. But all that just came from years of experience doing the thing that he does. And it doesn't have to be hip hop. It could be anything. You know, anytime you do something repeatedly, you get used to it and you get better.
That's true. And, you know, now I remember hearing him do freestyle like rap battles that a radio station in Dallas would host these rap battles. They would record them and then post them. And man, he was a beast, man. He was so good at that. He was just kind of reigning champion of these freestyle rap battles because he could flow so easily and come up with these words. And the reason he could do that is because he had been doing it for so long. He had so much practice with that skill set that he could walk into a situation, receive random ideas, and put something together that was cool. The same thing can happen with impromptu presentations. The more you do it, the more familiar you become with that process, the less stressful it is, the more clearly you're able to think and organize your thoughts, even on the fly, like a freestyle, and do something good. So our challenge to you, listener, is to objectively consider what time is available. Like, really, what do you have to work with? Not trying to make any excuses or anything like that. What do you have to work with? Use that time as best you can. Be as prepared as possible, given the time available.
But for other people, presentations are what you do. So it's not an element of your job. It is your job. So you probably have more time, and that calls for a different standard of practice. You're more like musicians putting on a concert. The expectations are going to be a notch higher than everybody else. So for the joy of a great presentation, embrace the practice that enables that joy to flow from you.
Yeah. And when you do well, people will assume it's effortless. They'll think that you get your money for nothing. Take it as a compliment, as proof of a great performance. So make the most of what you have. Make the most of the time available to practice so that you can, as much as possible, experience the joy that comes with practice. Do this, and you'll be well on your way to making big presentations in small rooms.
Have you been able to use some of the things that we talked about on the show? Well, let us know about it. Give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what information you found the most useful and made your presentation better.